to write a rule. We're going to have a little scenario here. We're going to say that it's from our network architecture stuff. There's been a Metasploit thing following this SMB access of that SMB file, and we want to see the follow-up stuff and all that kind of stuff. We know there's some things we can identify based on the events that have occurred. We know things about, for instance, the communication port from Metasploit. We know things like the Microsoft Windows piece and the copyright location. We got all that stuff. Can we create some nice signatures, some nice rules to match those signatures? Yes. There's a thought in my mind I just want to mention to you. Metasploit has moved, includes in it, encrypted communications these days. It's been there for a while. There's a mistake made by a large number of people who are using Metasploit. They don't change the keys. They just use the keys that came with Metasploit. Can anyone tell me why that's not a good idea, but awesome for us?
You can alert on the SSL certificate.
You can alert on the SSL certificate. Not only can you alert on the SSL certificate, what else can you do? What? You can decrypt the packets because you've got the key. They came in the Metasploit, so be aware of that. Okay, you might be able to. If you're seeing encrypted stuff, you think it might be Metasploit, it is worth just checking to see if it was using that key. All right, so back to this. So we've got some stuff we know what to look for. Here we're putting in some other details like I expect the Microsoft Windows to be at the beginning of the payload, and then I expect copyright to be within 34 bytes of that, and I expect Microsoft Corporation to be 6 bytes after that and within 21 bytes. Why am I including those byte count things? Because in order to make our rule really optimized, we want to be as precise as we can about where the data is. If I just say, look for packets that have Microsoft Windows in them, or look for sessions that have Microsoft Windows, I should say it that way, because if we're using the stream preprocessor in the stream, it's looking everywhere. And that's intensive. It's looking from beginning to end of the packet. So the more I can be precise about where that stuff is, the better it will be. So we could create a rule that looks like this. Now, we haven't done all of the pieces of this. We're going to go through them in just a second. But you can see here we've got some details that are telling us what the message will be when it alerts. There's some things that are keeping track of, do I alert just based on a packet going by, or does this have to be in a session? If it's in a session, does the directionality of that matter? Which way is it? Within kind of goes with distance, because now I'm describing it as a distance, or it must match within this many bytes of the last match. So those two really go hand in hand. They're complementary. I'm going to ignore the bottom piece of the slide. If that's helpful for you, you can use that. I'm going to stop where I am. Okay. All right. Is anyone confused at this point, or are you? Yeah.
Environment. To do this, you don't have a test environment on the same instance, right?
No, I have a test environment, but it's not on the sensor. Yes.
Right. So you have to go on another machine to test.
Yeah. Yeah. And I grab some packets and bring those packets over to where I'm going to test this rule and do the development. And once I've got it done, I'll add it into my repository of local rules and push it out. Yeah. Okay. Let's implement this then. So we have Microsoft Windows. Microsoft Windows should be appearing at offset 0 up to depth 17. So if it has not found Microsoft Windows by the time it gets to the 17th byte, guess what? He just did it up here. He went like this. I'm going to stop looking. So have we saved a lot of time searching the packet? That's the point of the optimization. And if that piece didn't match, well, it's not going to do any of the other content searches. We can add more to this. Let's look at our next one. Let's say that we have matched that piece. Now I'm going to say, I would like to find copyright at distance 0 within 34 bytes. Now, personally, I might write that a little bit differently. I might have tried to be more specific about the distance and said, well, it's going to be this far away. Why is it better sometimes to leave some wiggle room in the distance? And to answer. Ah, that's exactly the answer. What if the version changed and moved the thing closer? Or got a lot, you know, so what if it moved things around in the packet? I don't want to create a rule that is so tightly defined that it only alerts on one bad activity. If that version could be different than 7601, I want to alert on any of them. So let me leave some variability. So let's start looking after the word Windows, and we must find it within 34 bytes. So the distance says start looking here. The within says within this many bytes. Whoops, I went too far there. Within 34 bytes. Good so far?
Does the within specify the start of the string or is the entire string?
You have to match the entire string within that space.
Okay, so
yeah.
You get to copy, but
yeah, it would have not been enough. Yeah, so you've got to match the whole thing in that space. Oh, yes, yes. And it was on a previous slide. I didn't make a big deal about it. But if I want to match hexadecimal values, you can put them right inside of the string, inside of vertical bars. So that's all that's happening here. You could have just used parentheses, honestly, but chose to use the hex stuff here to show you can do it. Then we have one last one. This one's fast. Okay, so we've already matched up to, where have we matched? Where are we? Okay, so we would have matched to here so far. We were in the copyright piece, the copyright piece. And now we're saying at distance 6, so I can be up to 6 bytes away, that far away. Within 21, I have to get Microsoft Corporation. So within those bytes, right, I have to have the whole thing within that space. The distance 6 here is safe. Unless it's, you know, year 10,000, we're going to be safe on that one because we're not going to have more than 4 digits in there. It's always going to be a 4-digit date. Before I go further, content is easy. I can match content. Offset, distance, within, and depth. Are you generally okay with those? We're going to put it into practice, but you get what that's about? Okay, that's the thing most people are stuck on. This next topic, fast pattern. This is still dealing with content. The way that Snort works is to do content matches, it tries to identify the longest content you've got, and it's going to use that to match first. That makes sense. Because let's say I was matching on Microsoft Windows or 2009. I have those two strings that I'm going to match on for content. Which one of those will match far more often? 2009. You probably, and then we look to see if Microsoft Windows is there. Oh, it's not. It makes a lot more sense to look for Microsoft Windows first and then see if there's a 2009. Does that make sense? So it tries to match the longest string first. Sometimes, however, the longest string is not the best string. How frequently will Microsoft Windows appear in my data? I don't know. It could be there an awful lot. How often will the word Netcat appear in my data? That's going to be a pretty rare word. You know, I'm not talking about a word that's in common use. So if we talked about, I don't know, pick a word, flower, that's not going to be a great word to be a fast expression because, you know, people talk about flowers sometimes. Or email, that would be a horrible choice because, man, that's going to be everywhere. But Netcat, that's not a word that comes up in common conversation. So even though Netcat is shorter than Microsoft Windows, that would be an ideal choice of something to search for because there will be far fewer of those than there will be of the Microsoft Windows. So what Fast Pattern does is it says, hey, now listen, Snort, I know that you want to optimize this and use the longest string. I am telling you, in this case, this word is much better to match on than the longest string. So you're overriding the length matching. and you're forcing it to use the shorter string first. So it's another option for optimizing things, to make things faster. I can also do Perl-compatible regular expressions. This is not a regular expression class, so you know you can figure those out. If you need help doing one, I'll be happy to come over and help you, but I'm not going to try to do that with the whole class. That's just going to be painful. But I can use Perl-compatible regular expressions here. It is the full regular expression set. What if I try to write a new rule and it doesn't work? Well, this goes back to what I said at the beginning. If I want to write a new rule, start small. In fact, so I don't know if it's, I just have this thing that I think of things and it reminds me of movies. So I don't know if you'll know this one. Small moves. Small moves. Now, if that's not enough for you, add a little more. Small moves, sparks. Anybody? Contact. Thank you. See, I'm not alone. Contact. Jody Foster is the little girl, right? Her dad, small moves. You know, little small steps. Just take small steps. So start with the rule header. Okay, that works. Now let me add in the SID and the version. Okay, that works. Let me try my first content match. That works. Let me add a little more content. I got it. Okay, now I'm going to try to optimize it. Let me put in a within. Oh, it broke. Why did it break? Whatever I changed last broke it. Let me go back and fix that. Yeah. So that is actually the best approach toward debugging rules is write them slowly. Do not try to write them all in one go. It's a big, big mistake. There are some other oddities that come into play. I want to take a second and just break out of the slides for a moment and make you aware of some interesting snort behaviors. Here I have created, let me zoom in a bit, that's a little small. I have created some snort rules that are related to the very thing we're talking about. I have left the original rule in here, it's up here at the top, although I don't think that'll match anymore because I've chopped the data out. And I've created, let's see, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, so 9 rules here. I've created 9 rules here. And these rules are all alerting, well just take a look at that. What are they alerting on? They're all content matches. That's good. Let me try to share the screen with something else here. Okay, hang on a second. Okay, so here is a packet catcher. It has one packet in it. That's all that's in it. Look at the content of that. Microsoft Windows version 6.1.7601. You're good? What do these rules alert on? Every one of them, what do they alert on?
All parts of that.
That. They all alert on that same packet. They're slightly different content matches for that same packet. Are you with me so far? Let's run snort. I don't know why is this suddenly so huge? Oh, because I'm zoomed in, that's why. Okay, there we go. All right, so let's run snort using that configuration with that one packet. I'm going to have it generate the alerts onto the console with quiet, so we don't get all the stats, okay? How many of my rules fired? 3. That's interesting. 3 of them fired. Huh. Why only 3? Let's try it again. Do the other rules not match? I'll tell you what we'll do. Well, rule 2 fired. Let me comment out rule 2. Let's try to run it again. Oh, now I get 3, 10, and 4. All right, let me comment out. I'll comment out 3. Oh, if they overlap, man, that would be so nice. But at this point, I know I've got overlapping rules firing. Let's see what's going on here. So 4, 9, and 10. So 9 and 10. 4 is version. Well, okay, these don't happen to overlap. But let me just do this. So I'm going to turn them all back on. Let's see what matches now. We get 2, 3, and 10. That would be Microsoft Windows, Microsoft, and Windows. Do those all overlap? They happen to be the longest. Now we think, Andy and I were talking about this, we think this might be particular to this newer version of Snort, because in previous versions of Snort, what you would find is that every time you ran Snort, you would get a random match. So the rules that match would change, which makes no sense because it's the same configuration. So at least now, there seems to be some rationale, maybe it's the longest. Now this is undocumented, okay? This is undocumented. But I'm only getting three matches. Every one of these rules match. Why only three? Oh, they are subsets, but that's not what the problem is. Someone over there said there's a limit. And you have to search around to find this. There is a default limit that it will not log more than three events, even if they all match. That's a good thing to be aware of. That is not, no one like calls that to your attention or anything. And they say you just reconfigure it. So I've added this line in. Config event queue to log. So let's make it five and prove it works. Does it work? It works. Let's make it.
So the selection of rules at five, if you were to put a priority on them, would it change or would it still be
right? No. If I change the priority, the class type, no, it would not change. It would not change. Let's change it from five to, let's make it 10. How many rules match? Five. It's still five. If I change this to 100, it's still five. So in the documentation, you're supposed to be able to change this to be any arbitrary number you want to, but somewhere deep in the code base, I haven't tracked it down, somewhere deep in the code base, there is something implementing a hard limit of five. Yeah. This is in all versions of Snort. Yes. I haven't looked at the three beta thing. I have no idea what that thing does. But yeah, it's in all production versions of Snort. Yes? Five alerts based on that packet, but this would be true if it, whether it were this packet or this were a reassembled stream in a pseudo packet, no more than five things will alert on that match, will match that. It limits it at five. Now, I don't have any deep insight. My suspicion is that this was added. There was a hard limit added at some point because of a denial of service against Snort. What if I created something, you know, matched a million rules on the thing? That would be bad. I don't know that for sure. But I can tell you all production versions of Snort do that. It's not documented. Know about that. Every tool has limits, right? But that means that if you are getting out of your system, you get, if you haven't reconfigured it, you get three matches on a packet, there might actually be more there. Those are just the three things that it alerted on. I can change it to five. Should I be getting five alerts on a single packet or a single stream? I really should not. Maybe I need to tune up some rules. But know that if you're hitting those limits, there might be more things happening. Okay? False positives and false negatives. False positives and false negatives, they're all about misconfiguration of rules. It could also be it's an unknown attack. I mean, that's completely fair for a false negative. I just didn't know it could happen. It could also be, though, that in the rules or in the advances of the attacker community, they have now found new ways, perhaps, to obfuscate that attack, to evade the IDS so it's simply not seen. It could be that too. There are other things that we can control. It could be packet loss. I've got a fast network and I'm trying to span multiple ports onto one port. I'm going to lose packets. That stream could be desynchronized. There's a lot of things that could go wrong there. I could have just missed the one packet I needed. So there's lots of reasons that that could occur. False positives, telling me there's something wrong when there's not, not adequately understanding the deployment of my environment is a top problem for that, as is, again, loose rules. I need to tighten them up. But it is much better to have false positives than to have false negatives. So we're willing to tolerate some degree, some level of false alerts coming out of our system. We expect that to happen. In fact, if you're at a point where you don't have any false positives, you've got a different problem, because if I have no false positives, I have nothing that's telling me that the system is still running. Because it could just be dead at that point, and I wouldn't know, because I never see anything. That's not a good thing. Having too many false positives, though, is equally bad, because if I have too many false positives, what happens to my analysts? Yeah, they just acknowledge everything, and they're not even looking anymore. So it goes both ways. It is a constant effort to tune these things. It's not a do-it-once thing. All right, so this is some of the stuff we already talked about. Dealing with a rule, blah, blah, blah. So I can deal with how often things happen, overload for the same activity. And here in particular, it's not talking about what I showed you, the same packet generating multiple alerts. This is different. This is saying I've got multiple packets generating the same alert. Someone is trying to port scan my network. How often does that happen? Yeah. How many of those do I want to see? Do I want to see all million of them every hour? Or can I tell it? Would I want to tell it? You know what? Once you've seen that once in the last hour, stop telling me about it. So, for example, here we've got a brute force FTP attack looking for 530 login incorrect. Someone's attacking our server. They keep on going, trying. I don't need to see all those. Instead, I could say, track by source, count 50, 900 seconds. So once you have given me 50 of those, stop telling me for 900 seconds. And after 900 seconds, now you can tell me again, but that's going to quiet. So it's sort of a squelch. 50 per source. Yeah, 50 per source. Because we did a track by source. You could also do a track by destination. Now you could have lots of people attacking the same server. You're only going to get a couple of alerts every now and then. So I can adjust the squelch on those things. It is better to do that than to just remove the rule. Because now at least you have sensitivity that the event is happening. To deal with the evasion and insertion attacks we dealt with yesterday, this is the FRAG3 and stream preprocessors. Included in those, it's not just the fact that it needs to be in the stream, allowing me to see the whole conversation, is the content in there anywhere, and is it in a session, or is it just trying to trigger an alert? So it deals with those two things. But these also allow me to do the target-based reassembly for both TCP and for IP, if I configure them. So it's important to do that. And I can customize it by host. For false positive solutions, better vulnerability analysis is one of the best things to do there. Make sure we really understand our stuff. Turn off or adjust the squelch on our noisy rules. All right, fantastic. For optimizing of rules, now you had asked me this question, and I said there's a picture. Here is what our rules look like inside of memory, to a degree. What it's doing is creating a B tree, but the B tree is broken into a couple of pieces. It begins by looking at what the ports and protocols are, and then it goes further down into the fast pattern matching, and then after that, all of the other options that you have. What the result of the B tree means is that I can likely traverse the B tree for a particular packet to any node that I need to transverse to in 5 or fewer steps. It means that it's highly optimized. But it also means that the order that the rules appear in the file have no influence on how the alerting happens. This is not like a firewall where it's first match and exit. That's not how this works. It loads it into a B tree and optimizes it based on what the rule headers are and then based on the rule options. Does that make sense? B-tree. So have you heard binary tree? Have you heard binary tree? Okay, here's what that means. In a binary tree, I'll start there, you would have a node, and then I want to add a node to it. A simple binary tree would be saying, all right, let's say that this node has a value of D. That's what's in it. I want to add something to that. What I want to add, it has an A in it. So when I add the node, it'll say, is the A less than or greater than the D? Well, it's less. If it's less, I'm going to put the new node over to the left, and that has an A in it. I'm now going to add a B. Is the B less than or greater than the D? It's less. Is that less than or greater than the A? I'll put the B over here. So I'm creating a tree. Now I'm going to add in an F. The F is going to go over here. So it's a way of representing the data in memory where I can go one of two directions in my tree, binary tree. In a B tree, you would still have a node at the top, but you could go, it doesn't have to be just two directions. You could be going 15 or 20 different directions off of that node, which allows me to organize data in a way that I could have really big, complex data, but to find things within it, I would only have to traverse a few nodes. A great example of where you interface with this all the time is Microsoft Word autocorrect. It is not searching through the dictionary for all of the words that start with E. Instead, it's using a B tree. It's actually using a very particular type of tree. It's not really a B tree. So those of you in the know, just let me go on this one, okay? It's using a slightly different kind of tree. But use the B tree in your head. It says, oh, okay, so words starting with E. And then you type another letter. It says, okay, within the B tree, he just typed an E, then he typed a D. So now I'm only concerned about all of the words. The only thing underneath that is all of the words that begin ED. And then EDE. And so it gets smaller and smaller, the search space. Is that helpful? Okay. All right. So it's using a B tree inside. Writing good rules is all about optimization. You want to have content matches that are as large as you can that make sense. You want to use fast pattern matching, overriding that if there is something that's unique and specific. That's really the majority of good rule writing, using distances and offsets in within.